It looks like we're finally getting some really solid clinical advice that makes a lot of sense to us here in terms of something we can follow. And as well, millions of job losses in the United States and an absolutely robust, green, ever-climbing stock market. What does this mean? It means one of the greatest wealth transfers in history is underway. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Chris Martinson here with your daily update, day 106 of our reporting. I was really stuck. You know, it was the funniest thing. I started to write down all of the treatment options that I could find, and I started assembling them. I was thinking about making that into today's subject. And then, oops, came across this treatment options put out by EVMS. And so this is a Virginia Medical Group here. And so Eastern Virginia Medical School out of Norfolk, Virginia, May 5th, here they came out with this critical care COVID-19 management protocol. So I'm really happy to see this come out. Here they write urgent, please circulate as widely as possible. So I'm helping to circulate that here. It's crucial that every pulmonologist, every critical care doctor and nurse, every hospital administrator, every public health official receive this information immediately. This is our recommended approach to COVID-19 based on the best and most recent literature. We should not reinvent the wheel, but learn from the experience of others. This is a very dynamic situation. Therefore, we will be updating the guideline as new information emerges. Yes, that's my kind of people right there. Please check on the EVMS website for updated versions of this protocol. Here's the link here. Here's a short URL for it. Gets you right to this. And I love they start with a quote. If what you're doing ain't working, change what you're doing. All right, here was one of the first figures. It is actually not one of. It's the first figure, figure one. And so what I love that they showed here was that they broke out the severity of the illness and the time course over days. And so here between days one and five, right, when we're watching this particular illness progress along here to a more severe case as you go along, those first few days are really important. And so when you have very low amounts of ground glass infiltrates in the lung, people are going to be presenting with fever, possibly most likely malaise, they're coughing, maybe they got headache, diarrhea. What do you want to be doing here? You want to be doing antiviral treatments. That could be remdesivir, maybe, couple question marks. Could it be hydroxychloroquine, 400, 200 for 5 days, 400 milligrams, and then 200 milligrams. And they're saying vitamin C, 500 milligrams twice a day, right? So starting the vitamin C early and often, and of course, we agree with that because vitamin C is an important antioxidant, of course, helps the immune system in a variety of other ways as well. But what if the ground glass infiltrates are progressing and they're a little bit more serious? Now you're starting to see an oxygen saturation that's under 95%. So you got this mild hypoxia here. What do you do? Well, here you're going to start anti-inflammatory and immune suppressive treatments and drugs and things like that. Methylprednisone, 40 milligrams per day. Enoxaparin, 60 milligrams a day. Vitamin C, still down there. Now it's being upped. The dose is being upped here. And what if you're really out here, you're in pretty bad shape, and you're all the way out here in, you know, viral replication and hits a peak and is going down, but then up here it's showing your innate immunity. You got thrombophilia right here, so you're getting more and more clots. You got macrophage activation syndrome. You got cytokine storms, all this immune dysregulation out here, and you got this progressive hypoxia showing up. So methylprednisolone here and enoxaparin here and more vitamin C, 3 grams by IV. Look at that. So this is what they say is the course general. This is just a generalized treatment, but it's basically two big parts. Very easy to explain. You're going to be doing antivirals on this side. And once you cross over a certain boundary, you have to flip over into your anti-inflammatory and immune suppressive treatments down here. So antivirals first, early and often. And of course, where are most of the U.S. studies and other world studies that went to prove that hydroxychloroquine didn't work? Where did they start doing that? They started trying it out here. Criminal? At least it wasn't based on good data and logic, and we know that now, and that's pretty awful. So here's what I like about what they did here, too. The EVMS, they said, hey, if you're at home, here's what you do. Prophylaxis. Prophylaxis meaning don't catch this thing. All right. What can you do to help prevent catching this thing? They say, while there is very limited data and none specific for COVID-19, the following cocktail may have a role in the prevention slash mitigation of COVID-19 disease. While there is no high-level evidence that this cocktail is effective, it's cheap, it's safe, it's widely available. So why not then? First, vitamin C, okay, 500 milligrams. I'm doing, I'm a little over that. I'm pushing about a gram to a gram and a half myself here. But 500 milligrams BID here. Quercetin, 200 to 250 to 500 milligrams BID. Check that out as well. Zinc, 75 to 100 milligrams a day. That's a lot. I'm taking the picolinate myself here. A lot of people like the gluconate, particularly in a lozenge like that. After a month, reduce the dose to 30 to 50 milligrams a day. So that's a bit more than I'm taking. I'm taking 50 mgs a day right now. So I'm going to think about upping it based on this data here. Melatonin, slow release, begin with 0.3 milligrams, increase as tolerated to 2 milligrams at night. And then vitamin D3, 1 to 4,000 units a day. I'm taking 5,000 because that's the units I got right now. But I don't think that's any better or worse. There was some evidence to show that having too much vitamin D in your blood actually could work against you. So maybe this is a better dose range to start with. What does that all look like? Well, it looks like this. You got your, you know, we've been pointing this out for a while. I've also put selenium on here. I didn't see it on their list, but we just put out evidence yesterday that selenium ought to be on your list. So I've updated this, my personal immune booster supplement thing, to include selenium here as well. And also, if you do get into, I'll show you where they go next with, they're talking about if you have symptoms at home. Something that I have in my personal stash is N-acetylcysteine. Works like vitamin C to begin mopping up the oxidative radicals and oxidative stress compounds that would go out there and be doing some of the damage as your body's attempting to fight this thing off. And as well, of course, Gobble Mountain elderberry syrup as part of this whole thing. EVMS says if you are symptomatic and you're treating at home, vitamin C, 500 milligrams, quercetin, 250 to 500. That zinc, keep it up nice and high, 75 to 100. Melatonin, optimal dose is unknown, but 6 to 12 milligrams at night. Vitamin D3, keep it rolling along. It's probably acetyl salicylic acid. Yeah, that probably makes sense there. That would be aspirin. Optional, hydroxychloroquine, 400 milligrams on day one, followed by 200 milligrams for 4 days. Optional, in highly symptomatic patients, monitoring with home pulse oximetry is recommended. I highly recommend. I don't even recommend that. I wouldn't make that optional. Get one. If you don't have one of those little pulse oximeters for your finger, get one. We've already lent ours out to somebody across the street who was having some breathing difficulties. Turned out to be asthma, but it was great to be able to monitor that in real time. So I love getting data, and having a pulse oximeter is just a wonderful device. It takes the guesswork out. So EVMS says, you're in the hospital, but mild, what do they recommend? Well, they're keeping up with the vitamin C and the quercetin and the zinc and the melatonin and the D3. And now they're starting to put in some of the immunosuppressants in here, right? It's because now we're out here into the anti-inflammatory immunosuppressive part of this. So this is about the dividing line where I think they're in the hospital at this point in time. So in the hospital, but still considered mild. Famotidine, which we covered yesterday as well, they're putting that in. Optional, hydroxychloroquine, optional, remdesivir, if available. And there are avoid nebulization and respiratory treatments, non-invasive ventilation, okay, and all of that. But they're avoiding ventilation here. If you get, they say, if you're in the hospital and you're critical, remember I said, oh my gosh, this thing is complicated and complex. I can't read you through all of this stuff. You can follow the link if you care. There is just a lot of very, very complicated things that need to be done here, all the way through, you know, just broad spectrum antibiotics maybe. But here's the key. Escalation of respiratory support. They say try to avoid intubation if at all possible. And if you do have to use it, they say really keep the pressure as low as possible, because it turns out intubation and using a lot of pressure to keep the lungs working actually can do a lot more damage than not using it. So they're being, this is really flipping the treatment on its head. All that talk about needing ventilators, actually, there's going to be a lot of extra ventilators in this story because doctors are trying to avoid those now as much as possible. So this was pretty cool. This is how they put out their disease progression here, just in a single chart, looking at oxygen saturation over time. About here is where, you know, when it starts to fall, this is where they're going to have interventions coming in, prescription interventions, pharmaceutical interventions. And here again, this would be another cutoff point. Here, the inflammatory response is starting to climb and climb and climb, and right here is where it gets bad. So right about here, you see the oxygen falling off as the immune response, inflammatory response, really kicks in. And viremia, the viral load, actually is going down this whole time. So this is where the body's just basically fighting itself. Antiviral prescriptions to start. Yes, you want all of that early here, particularly in this where the virus is actually climbing. You would like to get the antiviral in this part as early as possible. And then you got to start the anti-inflammatory treatments, and then you've got to escalate anti-inflammatory stuff out here. So you've got your incubation phase, you got your symptomatic phase, you got your early pulmonary phase, you got your late pulmonary phase. And by the way, a lot of people go through a lot of cycles through the symptomatic phase, up and down, feeling better, not, feeling better, not feeling so good, and going on and on like this, where it takes a long time. This is a real honey badger of a virus. So love that. I thought that the EVMS people did a great job, and it's just interesting to see how these clinicians are starting to settle in on a lot of the same things that we've been talking about. I'm going to have to look into melatonin. I've looked at it a couple times. I'm not totally clear on that one yet, except for its ability to help support good rest and good sleep and stuff like that. But I'm going to have to look into it more deeply based on this. So I don't have much to say about that at this point, but I will. I'll figure it out. And if you have any information on that, send it to me. Well, that's a lot of misery for a lot of people, millions and millions of job losses. And it's a really terrible print, over 20 million job losses in total. But your misery is Wall Street's glee. Futures jump, stock futures jump ahead of worst unemployment report in U.S. history. So the stock market is cheering. And this is the man most responsible for that. This is Jerome Powell. He's the current chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve. He has personally been seeing to it that the rich people and Wall Street are bailed out as much as possible. This gentleman right here, he is most responsible for what we're seeing, where millions and millions and millions of Americans, ordinary Americans, are out of work, but the Dow Jones is cheering that on. In fact, this was before the market opened, 250 points up on the Dow. And here's why I get a little, I have a really strong point of view about this. And it comes from studying a lot of history, and it comes from the idea that your national narrative has to match the national reality. So the narrative in my country, the United States, is that we are a fair, just society, that we believe in equality, that we believe that hard work and your merits will get you far. We have a narrative that anybody can get ahead, that there's some sort of a level playing field. But that's absolutely obviously fiction, and poor people already know that, minorities already know that, but I guess the rest of middle America is starting to figure that out. And here's why I care. It was Plutarch who said many thousands of years ago, an imbalance between rich and poor is the oldest and most fatal ailment of all republics. I'm a conservative at heart in the sense that I'd like to conserve peace. I'd like to conserve prosperity. I would like to not lose any beautiful technologies we happen to have that really serve us. I'd rather live in a peaceful, stable, prosperous world, not the opposite of those things. And so on that, in that basis, I'm conservative. I'd like to keep things going. But as millions of Americans lose their jobs, we see the S&P partying like it's the best news ever. The Dow now up 359 points at the time I'm recording this. The NASDAQ up 134. Look at this. The Russell 2000. These are the small cap companies, the smallest of the small, up 3% on that news. How is this happening? Well, it's happening because the Fed equals rich people giving other rich people more currency printed out of thin air. Thank you, Jerome Powell, once again for doing this, because here's what the Federal Reserve is doing ever since the crisis started. They've been printing currency. Look at this massive increase from just about 4.2 trillion to 6.7 trillion. That's 2.5 trillion smackaroonies, 2.5 trillion big ones, okay? And what's up with the 2.5 trillion? Well, let's see what happened with that. That's easy to tell you. Here's where the Fed starts printing right here. Their total assets on their balance sheet, which is a proxy for what they're printing, in the red. And you can see what happened to the stock market right here as represented by its forward price earnings. This is the multiple the U.S. stock market trades at. Massive increase in that. In fact, the stock market is now worth more and pricier than it was even before this crisis started. So here's what the Federal Reserve thinks is important for you to know. The stock market is now worth more than it was before 20 million people lost their jobs and before the second quarter GDP collapsed by some 20%. So this is just the Fed making sure that rich people's portfolios are happy and well served. So this is what happens. We call these the claims. The stock market is really a claim on something. It's a claim on the underlying economy and the companies that make up the underlying economy. So the claims of the already rich are now growing ever larger. The JP Morgan sees the economy contracting maybe by 40% in the second quarter. Okay. And look at this. As of today, the NASDAQ 100 is now worth 21% more than it was a year ago. A year ago, it's worth 21% more because the Fed has pumped it up. If we run the math, if we said, well, if we said this was fairly priced, and I don't think it was, but if we said a year ago, the NASDAQ 100 was fairly priced, one unit of that compared to one unit of the economy, it had a relative value of about one. But now the claims of the NASDAQ 100 are 21% larger and the economy is 60% of what it used to be because it's 40% smaller. That means that the claims of the rich people are now worth twice as much as they were a year ago. They have twice as large a claim on the overall economy as a year ago. That's what Jerome Powell thinks is fair. He thinks that that's fair and that's right and that's good. And how silly is this? How much? How silly? How much? This much. The NASDAQ now, if you index, it's bigger than the whole rest of the world stock market, just the NASDAQ, just U.S. technology shares. So it's NASDAQ composite versus the MSCI World Index, ex-U.S. Got to strip the U.S. out of that. Market cap in U.S. dollars. Look at this. It's worth more than it's over one. It made it over the 1x amount, right? So is index, the NASDAQ is now allegedly worth more than the rest of the world stock market combined. That's crazy. So what's going on? Well, this is called a wealth transfer. I've been writing about this for many years. This coming great wealth transfer. We foresaw a lot of this coming. It's happening on steroids now. So I wrote this back in 2017. Just today on Twitter, I said that a market distributes capital efficiently. That's what we're taught in school. That's what a market does. But a market, with two air quotes, a market redistributes wealth to the top. It takes from the many and gives to the few. And the Federal Reserve is now staffed with believers in markets. And the largest wealth transfer in history is underway. It's being done very consciously. It's not unconscious at all. It's not unintentional. It's very intentional. It's a reverse Robin Hood sort of an approach right here. Again, from the many to the few. And who's at the head of that Robin Hood League? That's Jerome Powell. He is the reverse Robin Hood. He is the face of it right now. It's really awful. And the reason I speak against it so strongly is because we have plenty of cautionary tales from the past. So in the Weimar Republic, there was this period of time. If you read books about it, they call it this great wealth destruction. You know, it used to be a Deutschmark would buy you a loaf of bread, and then later you needed a whole wheelbarrow full of them to buy that same loaf of bread. And books are all written as if that was a horrible destruction event, and the middle class just got wiped out. But if you were paying attention, the true wealth of the nation, it didn't change. It just, who owned it, that did change, right? So what's the true wealth of a nation? Let's talk about it this way. I like to think of wealth in a wealth pyramid. This is what we talk about in our book, Prosper. This is what we talk about a lot at Peak Prosperity. So if we look here, primary wealth is the wealth of the land itself. This is rich soils. It's fishing grounds teeming with fish. It's thick stands of timber, oil in the ground, all of that sort of stuff. Primary wealth. If you don't have primary wealth, you can't make any secondary wealth. What's that? Well, this is fish in the market. It's vegetables that have been grown and brought to market. It's lumber at the store. Secondary wealth is the means of production But the means of production don't have any relevance if there's no primary wealth to draw from. You can't have gas at the gas station in your secondary market if you don't have any oil in the ground to pull out. So primary begets secondary. And then tertiary wealth are the claims that we put down on all of these other two down here. What's tertiary wealth? It's currency, stocks, bonds, things like that. But they're just claims. And so when we look back to the Weimar example, the primary wealth of the nation didn't change before their currency got completely destroyed, and after, there was still the same amount of arable acres of land for farmers to farm. As well, there were just as many roads, just as many bridges, just as many factories, and all of that. The secondary wealth didn't go anywhere. So what happened? Well, it's that all the people who had their wealth in tertiary wealth, they owned money in the bank, they owned government bonds or whatever. They had all their wealth stored up here, and they didn't manage to get it back down into secondary or primary wealth. So at any rate, it broke down for them. And that's what happened. So it was called a wealth transfer. They called it wealth destruction, but I'm calling it a wealth transfer because what happened in the Weimar Republic, as well as many other events we can study in history, is this. Who owned the primary and secondary wealth? That changed hands, right? So try and act surprised. If the Federal Reserve is busy printing currency out of thin air, it's handing it to big companies like BlackRock, who are then going to end up buying distressed mortgages from mortgage companies. And the next thing you know, the landlords of the United States are going to change. And it won't be any surprise what's happening. The landlords are all going to be these very big, very well-connected companies. And we're going to also see that the small and medium-sized enterprises are completely ruined in this adventure. Meanwhile, large corporations get all the bailouts and handouts they need. It's just this is an acceleration of a process that's been in play for many years. It's taking from the many and giving it to the few. And this man right here, Jerome Powell, he is at the head of that. But of course, the entire Federal Reserve is part and parcel of that. You want to hear it said a little bit more gently. Here's how Warren Buffett put it. He said this.
I would say this. If you,
let me pull this down so you can read while he's speaking. Okay.
I would say this. If you can have negative interest rates and pour out money and incur more and more debt relative to productive capacity, you'd think the world would have discovered it in the first couple thousand years rather than just coming on it now. But we will see.
Yeah, if you can have negative interest rates and you can pour out money and incur more and more debt relative to productive capacity, you'd think the world would have discovered this in the first couple thousand years rather than now, right? Let me decode that a little bit. Here's how I'd put it. A picture of me from a number of years ago. It's taken in a redwood tree. That's a burnt out redwood tree behind me because I kind of like that picture. I would put it this way. Look, if you could simply print up money and hand it exclusively to rich people and create widespread prosperity, you'd think the world would have discovered this in the first couple thousand years rather than now. People, there's an extraordinary wealth grab going on right now, and it's literally just an acceleration of a trend that's been in play for quite a while right now. And the only question is, are we going to stand for that, and are we going to allow that to happen? If yes, well, you know, you and everybody in your lineage for many generations will have diminished prospects because there's only so much economic oxygen to go around. And if that is being printed out of thin air and handed preferentially to a very few well-connected players, it means by definition, there just isn't enough to go around for everybody else. Said another way, rich people who are already richer than they could possibly imagine don't know how to do anything else besides continue that particular part of the story. They live in their own little echo chambers and they talk to each other. And because of that, they don't know what else to do here besides print money and hand it out to their buddies. And next thing you know, try and act surprised when it turns out that all of the wealth is concentrated in the hands of the few. And that's the trajectory we're on. And we really ought to decide if that's something we want to stand for. Because here's the thing, if that's where my nation wants to go, and there are several other nations on the same track, if that's where we want to go, I think we ought to have a vigorous debate about that. I think we ought to talk about it. I think we ought to have some sort of vote. I think there should be some decision-making process around that. But the Federal Reserve is neither an elected position. Nobody there is elected into place. And there's no way for us to recall them if we ever wanted to. So it's an unelected small group of people who are making very, very large decisions. The largest of which is this. They're printing money out of thin air here and they're handing it to their buddies in who are well connected. And the next thing you know, it's going to end up that all of the primary and secondary wealth of the land, the houses, the commercial real estate, the farmland, the oil, the mineral resources are all going to end up in the hands of a very, very tiny number of people. And even Warren Buffett, one of the largest cheering champions of America, is starting to say, this all sounds a little odd. He's more than that. It's not just odd, it's ridiculous and patently absurd. All right, conclusions for today. Great and open-minded clinicians are starting to figure things out, how best to treat COVID-19. They're sharing their findings. If you haven't done it, I would highly advise that you go and download this. Of course, the links will be down below this. You can just click the link. But I've downloaded this, and if I ever got COVID, I would want to make sure that my doctors were following this protocol or could explain very clearly and articulately why they weren't following it. So I like what they've done there. Good job. And of course, they support there, those clinicians, what we've been saying is treat the terrain. That's your body. This means boosting your immune system as much as possible. So no mystery there. There's a lot of things coming up, and I was very glad to see the doctors there start to really put in the quercetin, the zinc, the D3, the selenium. I'm going to have to find a way to cram melatonin in here after I research it a little bit and these other things. But treat the terrain. This is what you do, because that's your best chance of beating COVID at the end of it anyway, is having an immune system that fights it off. There is a great disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street right now. It's actually just merely a prior trend, but on steroids. It's just getting really, really worse, which means that your regional managers, whichever country you live in, they're not leaders at this point. No, not even close. They can't imagine doing anything other than rewarding themselves and their friends. They live in bubble echo chambers. They talk to each other. They don't have any communication with the outside of their bubbles, and so not good. It's disgusting. It's demoralizing, all of this at first. But you know what? Later, it becomes infuriating and activating. So I'm looking forward to the activating part, because we need to have that widespread conversation about it. Of course, hard to have conversations when this channel continuously gets unsubscribed. So remember, resubscribe to it if necessary. Look, I don't know how dark it's going to have to get before it gets better, so I keep saying things like plant a garden. But on top of that, read Prosper, our book, free download, get it, and figure out how you're going to begin boosting, what your strategy is for boosting all 8 forms of capital. Planting a garden is part of our Living Capital series, as well as the health of your body. That's treating your own terrain and boosting your immune system. So really, I'm promoting here at this stage of things, it's time to really boost your living capital as much as possible. And beyond that, social capital, of course, your emotional capital, financial capital, and all the rest, these are all very important too. So get the book, check it out. In the absence of doing any of that, plant a garden. Hey, we're all done for today. Have a great weekend. Think all of this through. We'll be back on Monday. I love the stories you all have been sending, so keep them coming, and I'll feature one a day going forward, because it's important, I think, for all of us to hear what other people are doing as well. And if you can't wait all weekend to come back to this topic, come by Peak Prosperity and check out our site. We've got a lot of public information there, and as well for people who want to support this work and go a little deeper and interact with Adam and I behind the scenes a little bit. We have a subscription service there as well. God bless everybody. Take care. And hope you have a great weekend, and you get some of your garden planted. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. Adam Taggart, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, here with good news. In his daily videos, Chris often refers to the book that he and I wrote, Prosper: How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. It presents a practical model for living with greater resilience, and those who read it and followed its advice were much better prepared for the coronavirus outbreak than the average household. Given its heightened relevance to the turbulent times we now find ourselves in, Chris and I want everyone to benefit from this book's formula for better, more secure living. So we're giving the book to you for free. To get your copy, simply visit peakprosperity.com/freebook. We think you'll find this an extremely valuable and inspiring resource for the current COVID-19 outbreak and for being well-positioned for any kind of crisis that comes our way in the future. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.